Welcome to the 92nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I'm really happy to be here today because it is post-Ironman Louisville, and I'm alive to talk about it. It was quite an event. I finished. I had to look up my time because it got to the point where it wasn't that relevant. The official time was 13 hours, 26 minutes, and 41 seconds. So it was not the time that I was hoping for. But in looking back, it was a good day. I guess to recap the race a little bit, the weather became a little cooler in Louisville, which is good for a lot of people, but us Floridians might like it a little hotter. The air temperature in the morning of the race was 49 degrees, and the water temperature was 73 degrees. So the water was the warmest thing of the day. The goal was to pace myself at a comfortable pace for a 2.4-mile swim, and I think I did that pretty well. I stayed near the buoys. For those unfamiliar with open water swimming, they have a line of buoys up and down the river that you use to navigate with. The race started with athletes jumping in one by one. So we lined up on the line to jump in the water with about 2,500 or so athletes snaked down. It took me about 20 minutes to get to the water from the time the race started. So you jump in the water and you follow the buoys up the river and then swim down the river. And this was the Ohio River, and it goes under several bridges. And we did a practice swim the day before, so I knew about where some of the bridges were, but it just seemed like, you know, there were a lot more bridges the day of the race. But anyway, it was a good race. When they start out one by one, you don't get quite as congested. So unless you're around the buoys, you pretty much have open water to swim in. You're not beating into people. There's occasional bumping into people or occasional leg grabbing, but for the most part, it's much more pleasant than a mass start where everybody just kind of fights for open water. So I got on the swim I think it was around an hour and 16 minutes, so that wasn't bad at all. And changed into my bike gear. The bike ride was a little cooler. So I was cold the first couple of hours. You know, we're used to riding in Florida at around 75, 78 degrees, getting into the 90s, and we started out in the low 50s, so that was a little chilly on the bike, but it should be advantageous. I don't know that I can say that it was. The bike course was hilly. I think there was upwards of 5,000 feet elevation change over the 112 miles. Which is not horrendous, but it's a little bit more than someone's training on flat for the most part. We did not train any hills for this race, so we trained in wind, which we thought would help us. I probably didn't get the distances in that I could have, but it was what I could do with work and family obligations. So I rode conservatively on the bike. I didn't push because I knew there was a long day on the bike ride. You kind of went out of town and made two loops around country roads. It seemed like we were making a lot of turns. In my head, you know, this lollipop that we're supposed to do twice, it seemed like we should be coming around. But it took a long time to complete the first loop, it seemed. But I felt good. I can't say that I felt horrible at really on any part of the ride. You know, after the first loop, there's an aid station it's called a special needs station. So at mile 60, you can get off your bike and you have a bag that you could put what you wanted, and actually put some boiled potatoes in my bag and with some more drink mix separately. And those boiled potatoes tasted phenomenal. They were really good. It was, I really felt like I was hungry, I guess hungry for real food. So that tasted good. And went on my way for the second ride. And about 85, 88 miles, which was the longest ride I did in training, I started to think, you know, it's okay. I'd soon get off the bike now, but there's more rides to go. So I kept pedaling along and, you know, finally finished the 112-mile bike ride. Happy to get off and look forward to running a marathon. As I talked to previously podcasts, I was having a little Achilles trouble. And I wasn't sure how that was going to work out. I've been stretching, foam rolling, and trying to massage it. And I get off the start running, and it was pretty stiff. And I thought, well, this is going to be a long day. And frankly, the Achilles didn't bother me as much as I was just tired from the bike ride. So I didn't have much of a run left. It was kind of a slow shuffle for the marathon course. But you know, it's amazing when you realize you have to run 26 miles, how you can break it up in your head. It was two loops, so out and back 13 twice. And I just kind of broke it up to that you have to run out to the turnaround point, and that would be 6 miles or 7 miles, and then you come back, and then you go out again. And the way the race went, it went out past the Churchill Downs stadium and out a little bit further to a residential area, and then you turn around, and you came back past Churchill Downs and University of Louisville and, you know, in some neighborhoods. And it was just straight out and straight back with a little bit of an incline, but nothing that you could really call a hill. So that part was nice. And there was aid stations every mile or so. And GI-wise, I didn't feel too real bad. I took Coke, Cola, and orange slices and some pretzels along the way. I did a couple of the goos, which are little packs of simple sugars that are 100 calories. They're flavored. It's hard to, you know, after a while, all day of that kind of stuff, they're kind of hard to take. But I did manage to get some of those in. So I never really had a terrible issue with my stomach, so that was good. So the reality of it is, you know, finishing the race, it was just a matter of generalized fatigue and not being able to go any faster than I could, more so than any injury I could blame or any GI issue. So for the most part, it was a really good day. You know, this is a nutrition podcast, and other than people that listen wanting to find out whether I lived or died in the Ironman, I you know, always think about, you know, how this relates to what I do as a physician, as a person, and, you know, why do I do endurance events? I had a patient ask me, you know, if you can't win, why do you possibly do a marathon? And, you know, the answer was that basically to challenge myself and to see how I react in the face of things not going right, and to kind of just have a day that you're out playing all day long, doing what you love, being outside, riding, swimming, biking, running, and to see if you can do it a little faster each time or to do it a little bit better each time. With the Ironman, you know, there's swimming and there's biking and there's running and those techniques, but there's also the nutrition that goes with it and pacing that goes with it. And so every, you know, and then you throw in the weather and you throw in different courses. So there's multiple challenges that are, I guess, that I find, you know, quite interesting. And, you know, I like to see what I can do. I think that, you know, I have a pretty easy job for the most part. You know, I work inside and nobody's shooting at me, and I don't have to drive or sit in traffic that long. So I don't have very many stresses in my daily life. So I think it's good to have some stress so that other things may be able to handle a little bit more, to be able to focus a little bit more on the other aspects of my life. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I do it. Things that I saw along the way that are inspiring. You know, if you look around there in the Ironman race, there's all shapes and sizes and ages of people. There were young people around me at 24, 25 going as slow as I was. And there were people that were older than I that were passing me. I think there was an 82-year-old that finished the race. So, you know, there's all ages and sizes. There were, a few people that were, would enter the morbidly obese category, plugging along and putting the miles in. So, you know, you have to be inspired by somebody willing to take that physical challenge, because it's a lot of pounding on your body. And if you're pounding that much weight, you're really, you know, and you're going slow, you're out there a long time. I saw a bilateral amputee, and he was running, and I thought, you know, any pain that I feel in my Achilles, you know, is nothing compared to what this person must be enduring. I saw a lady with only one arm, and how she must have to overcome bicycling and swimming, and making that challenge. But again, you know, moving right along without any sign on her face or on his face that, gee, this is harder for me. It's just what it is. And it's a challenge that they were really too willing to accept. You also see people cheering for strangers. This course, because it was out and back, there were people, a lot of people just sitting out that had nothing to do with triathlon, cheering. Families, you know, with grandparents, parents, kids out cheering, and they were cheering for everybody, signs made for their family, but you had your name on your bib, and people were just happy to cheer for everybody. And that's a pretty good sign of sign for humanity in these days when there's so much negativity to around. You know, it's you know, a pleasure to have a whole day, 13 hours and 26 minutes and 41 seconds of positive feedback, positive humanity. Even in the beginning, when we were all standing in line to get into the bikes and standing in line to get into the swim, there wasn't any fighting or ill will. People were making friends and talking to each other and laughing and, you know, enjoying the 48 degree temperature in your big sweatshirt while you wait to get in the water. So, I mean, that's a great day when you can be around an environment that's positive all day long. The people that man the support tables, the changing areas, they strip the wetsuits, the aid stations where they provide drinks and pretzels, these are all volunteers. And they, you know, were nothing but happy and helpful to try to help people any way that they could. Everybody was extremely pleasant. You know, you talk to people. There was a guy from Daytona Beach that had just experienced the hurricane, still came up to help out. You know, it's just a really good day to see just the best of humanity. The other thing about it is during the race, you know, the funny thing when you think back on it, I never thought of anything except what I was doing at the time. So, you know, my mind never wandered during the swim, like it might in practice, about different things, the podcast, the office, you know, what do I have to do? It was just about swimming. And then it was just about biking, and then it was just in the nutrition and how far it was, and the, you know, looking at you know, taking the hills up, taking the hills down, trying not to crash. I did think about my day job going down the hills really fast and being a little concerned with the wind that I do have a day job and I need not to crash. But other than that, you know, it was pretty focused on, it was just biking, just swimming, and then just running from place to place, and every step forward was a step forward to the 140-mile day. So, you know, I think that just is very overall just a very positive experience. So when you finish, the things that made me giggle, I guess, you know, I got called. So I'm running mostly in the dark, you know, I guess, or at least the second half of the run was in the dark or the low light. And I got called ma'am twice. And I thought to myself, you know, everybody's dressed alike. You know, I had a ball cap on and I had sunglasses on earlier. Then they were on top of my head. And it's like, so, geez, do I look that old? You know, I got called, you know, be called ma'am. And so I giggled over that. And then I also giggled when we finished, you know, there's a volunteer there to kind of catch you and give you your medal and give you a foil blanket and water and direct you, you know, down to the next step. And they, you know, they act like you, you know, they're really so overly helpful that like that you, you know, they expect you to just keel over at any second. And I thought, geez, you know, I didn't feel that bad. You know, did I look that bad? But I guess I'll post a picture on the website. I don't think I look like I was going to die, but it was nice for everybody to be so helpful. And it's kind of funny that they were really expecting the worst. We traveled from Florida to Louisville. We drove. And as far as our nutrition goes, the one funny thing that happened the day before the race, where we were sitting at a restaurant having a large salad and a pizza with veggies, the lady people came by, and they were Ironman racers as well. And they's like, are you really going to eat that the day before an Ironman? Meaning looking at the giant green salad. And it's like, well, yeah, you know. And I thought to myself, the worst problem I ever had was when I ate cheese many years ago and, you know, trying to race in the GI distress. So I wasn't worried at all about having salad before I raced. And we had oatmeal for breakfast. And that evening, we kind of take it kind of light. But I actually even had sauerkraut. I had beets. You know, we had Thai food the day before that was very spicy, and you know, with tofu and some vegetable rolls. And you know, like I said, I felt great, not too full, no indigestion problems during racing. So I really think when people have a lot of GI issues, are associated with the dairy. And I cringe when I see this milk as recovery, because I think there's could be nothing worse than you could drink to try to recover from an endurance event when your gut is shut down and everything is inflamed, to try to put dairy on top of that, or try to, you know, metabolize that for the next day. So I think that really people think when they have trouble, they either got into a bunch of oil and fat and hard to process foods the day before, as opposed to a lot of antioxidants and a lot of nutrients that you get in a whole food plant-based diet, you know. So we were very cautious, very focused on having fruit and having a lot of greens, and of course, again, the beets, so as well as, you know, the rice as far as our whole grains go, and that went, you know, very, very well. And in traveling, you know, again, we actually stopped at Panera a couple of times for their oatmeal, and then they have a Thai salad that we tell them to hold the chicken and, you know, eat with avocado, and it has soybeans in it, so it's in roasted carrots, so it's actually a really good salad that we had along the way. We had some other Thai food. Pei Wei will make a vegan dish that's spicy. We found a Noodle and Company in Louisville that was really good, and had a big salad there, and then a big stir fry of vegetables, and that was located near the school. And it was interesting; it was near the University of Louisville, and I was really, really happy to see that when we went in, there was this giant line of college kids getting into this Noodle Company and ordering these bowls of salads and vegetables. And you know, it just goes to prove that if that food is there, that kids will select it. The hot dog joints next door didn't have anybody, and this place had a line. And you know, there was a couple other hamburger joints that had no one. Subway had hardly any people, and this place was really packed. So I thought that was a great sign for you know, young people wanting good food, as opposed to just, you know, fast burgers and fries and pizza, like people assume that college kids want. So, you know, I'll go back to it. If you offer kids and children the opportunity for good foods, they're gonna take it. And they proved it this way, even in lieu of some of the other stuff. So that was really cool. What would I have done different in this race? Well, you know, the same thing I say after every race. I wish I would have trained more, you know, but life gets in the way, and this is not my day job. It's my hobby, and my hobby has to be a stress release for me, and it is. So I, you know, train when I can. You know, probably did 15, 18 hours of training a week at a pace that I could handle. There were days that I missed for traveling and family obligations, but that's part of life, and I don't regret any of that. And I think, again, that's kind of what this is all about, is to do what you can and see what you've got. And then, you know, maybe I'll get to train more for the next one. Maybe I won't. You know, maybe I'll train a little differently. I don't know. The idea is just to be able to go out and train every day and stay healthy and to move and to become mobile. So we'll just see how it goes. We were already talking about the next Ironman, maybe Chattanooga next year. We'll find one somewhere. The next thing I have on my calendar is a marathon in December in Sacramento. And then there's a half marathon, and there'll probably be another marathon in January. We try to do our first ultra maybe in the spring, which will just probably be the 50K level to start with. So, yeah, you know, the idea is to keep moving, keep training, keep experiencing nature, because I think that it's what keeps us all kind of sane and focused. While we were driving, we listened to a book. I think I might have mentioned it on the last podcast by Christopher McDougall, who wrote Born to Run. This book is called Natural Born Heroes. And it was interesting, you know, it's talking about movement and the ability to endure. And I guess we can endure things more as humans than we think possible. And sometimes you just have to get out of your own road to do things. The idea of mobility and to keep your body, you know, functioning by doing all kinds of crazy things. So, you know, if an Ironman is not in your, something that you aspire to do, then some sort of movement, you know, again, swimming, biking, running are all options, but it might be, you know, heavy lifting and carrying rocks and building a wall, or running or hiking through the woods. But I think it's extremely important to keep mobile no matter what your age is. This 22 push-ups for the troops has turned into a push-up streak for me. Today was day 38 of push-ups, so now I'm doing 27 at a clip. My mother is 83. She actually has done the push-ups as well from her knees, and she's getting into it. I've had... In some respects, I put every day, I posted on Facebook doing my push-ups and with the dogs, and, you know, it's kind of funny, and, you know, my hair is all messed up because it's after a run, and so it's not a very pretty picture, but I do the push-ups. And I thought about stopping just because it's, you know, maybe a little silly for me to be doing push-ups on Facebook. But I keep getting feedback seems to be motivating other people. So there are strangers that are now involved in doing push-ups. A nurse came up to me at the hospital and said that her husband saw the push-ups and he decided to start doing push-ups and now is going to go back to the gym. So again, it's a positive. It's, if anything's a little bit motivating, then I'm willing to do it. So, and again, it's something that doesn't take very long. It takes a couple of minutes to set the phone up and do 27 push-ups and post it online. So it comes down to that you can do things that, you know, you just have to make time for. It's about like brushing your teeth. So you do the push-ups. So I encourage everybody to do something that, you know, go out of their way to do a little something. If you don't move, then move for 2 or 3 minutes, add that on to your day. If it's just going through some full body movements, get on the ground, get off the ground. I tell my patients, you know, can you get off the ground from, you know, can you go to the ground and sit down and get up without difficulty? Because that's huge as you get older, to be able to move your body and to squat down like a child. And I talked a little bit about that in the last podcast, but again, I think it's extremely important. The other thing that happened this week, I got an email from a friend of my cousin's, actually, and not Fred, but another cousin, and she was a social worker, and she had been called to investigate these people in Western Pennsylvania that are raising vegan children, no less. And should the children be taken away? Not so much different from in Italy, where they took the children away from people that were raising them vegan. And this woman did not know much about what veganism entailed and if it was safe for children. And I was really happy that she reached out to me for some information. And we talked back and forth, and we talked about, you know, there can be vegans that are very unhealthy, eating Twizzlers and Oreos and fast foods, Coca-Cola and soft drinks and sugary cereals. And those people aren't getting the amount of nutrients that they should be getting. On the other hand, there are a lot of children that are living on Happy Meals and sugary cereals and hot dogs and French fries every day that aren't getting the nutrients that they should be getting. And nobody's worried about those children, even though they're recurrently ill, even though that they're obese. But, you know, you have a thin little kid that's theoretically being raised plant-based or being raised vegan, and everybody gets bent out of shape and think that these are poor parents. When, you know, if they chose to be vegan for animals or they chose to be vegan for their health, they're probably thinking about what they're doing. And so I encouraged her to make sure that they were getting adequate nutrition in the form of fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And otherwise, yeah, they're going to be thin and normal weight kids. They're not going to be fat. But if they're active and healthy and they're not having any infections and they're growing, then it's perfectly fine. And the worst case scenario, then maybe the family would need some education on providing some cost, you know, foods that don't cost a whole lot, foods that don't cost very much that are nutrition. You know, again, beans and rice and farmer's market and buying fruits that are on sale. And, you know, there's a lot of ways of frozen fruits. So that you can do this on a budget as a family. You don't have to eat fast food. So that was, and she was very receptive, and I think that's going to be result in not only positive for the family that's trying to raise the children vegan, but I think it's made this woman take a look at some of her other clients and take a look at maybe herself and her own health as far as what she's eating. So we'll see. I encouraged her to, you know, ask and, you know, gave references. And nutritionfacts.org is a good site if you have children or grandchildren that you're concerned about, you know, is vegan okay or you're being challenged. You know, there's a lot of articles on nutritionfacts.org about the, it is very healthful for a child to get all vitamins and minerals on a plant-based diet. As far as the office goes, this week was class one in a new 6-week session. And we always start with talking about endothelial reactivity and the production of nitric oxide from eating plants. It's always interesting to see where people are. I have them do a 4-leaf survey, and had some people that were, had a couple that were 3-leaf that had been a patient in the office that had started a month or so ago. And the rest of the people were just starting. So they were not plant-based at all. So it's kind of good because I kind of like starting from scratch and seeing people grow and seeing people progress and get into it. I did a little different. I usually do hummus and how to make dressings the first class, but I decided to make sunflower seed tuna and serve that on cabbage leaves, red cabbage leaves. It looks pretty. I also showed, you know, how people make mistakes as far as their cooking go. I bring everything to the Chamber of Commerce with me, and I forgot the celery and carrots for the tuna. So it wasn't quite as tasteful, but they got to taste the tuna and the dulce flakes and a little bit of tamari. And I didn't have any relish. But, you know, with the dulce flakes and just the tuna itself and the tamari, it is really tasty, especially if you put that in the red cabbage leaves. So it was quite good without it, and everybody liked it. Today for lunch, Added the celery and carrots that I didn't add yesterday, and some spicy relish, and it was even good then, and or even better. And I put it on the red cabbage, and it was, you know, it's filling. But there's that good kind of full that you feel very energetic after you eat. We also had a bok choy salad that I make pretty much every time, the first class, with pomegranates and pomegranate seeds, oranges, and the dressing is lemon juice with a little bit of agave and a little bit of rice vinegar. And that's a really refreshing salad, and bok choy is, you know, loaded with phytonutrients. It's one of the great greens to have a cup or so a day. Most people had not ever had bok choy, especially in a salad. If you get Chinese food, you might get that occasionally, but for the most part, it's Napa cabbage. But the bok choy is really, really good and refreshing. People had not had pomegranate seeds or ever, you know, cut one. So, and they liked that and enjoyed it. And so that's something that, you know, they can go to. A lot of times, you know, in the class, people are just, you know, oh, only thing I can eat is salad. And, you know, I personally love salad with, you know, cucumbers and peppers and tomatoes and mushrooms and beets and onions and, you know, everything, and some beans. But sometimes you just want something a little bit different. So if you can change it up with a different kind of green, such as bok choy or kale, or, you know, add different things to it, different fruits, it does go a long way to kind of change things up and make it different and creative. And it's a very pretty salad to look at, so it's a great if you were going someplace to take with you. We actually make it at the holidays because of the red pomegranate seeds. It's very festive looking. So it's a nice tool to have in their repertoire, because what we're doing in the class is trying to give people ideas of what to cook and menus to have. And so that's all part of it, finding, and I always want to find something that everybody's going to like for the most part. I find if I can just get people in the door of the nutrition class, they're very receptive to changing what they eat, and are so amazed to find out and to actually realize that what you eat has so much to do with your overall health and your well-being. So, you know, again, it's the best part of my week. I really do enjoy the class, and, you know, I don't mind getting home late after the class, and it's very uplifting. As far as my garden is going, my okra is continuing to grow and actually kind of regenerating itself from the bottom up, so I have plenty of okra. We actually pickled some. Pickled with vinegar and some salt, and so we'll see how that turns out. And then just also put some hot peppers in one of the okra jars to see how that tastes. And I have this little pepper bush that has these very, very hot red peppers, and made some pepper relish and put those in to soak and see how that turns out. They're extremely hot. I would guess that little jar is going to last a long time. Because it's so hot, you can just use a tiny bit of it. My jicama has bloomed, so I'm going to have some jicama. You can't eat it, but I have a loofah growing. In Florida, you can grow, you know, the loofahs you use to bathe with, and they look like a big zucchini, and we have it growing up a trellis, and it's hanging down, so I actually have one on the vine, so I'll have to post that at some point on the website. It seems to be growing nicely. Our fruit trees are just growing leaves. There's no fruit on until next year. And I think this weekend, since there won't be any long training runs or ride, we'll try to get some eggplant in and some cabbage in, and plant some more beans and get the winter garden growing. I have tomatoes that are growing, and so, and a few more green peppers that need to be planted. So hopefully we'll have a good garden and a good crop. It's so good to go out and get your own basil and your own cilantro and oregano, you know, on the porch. And then we have sweet potatoes, and So it's just a really fun hobby, and I would again encourage anybody that to grow some herbs that they have, and it adds spice to your food. And you know, growing some hot peppers, you can grow those on your porch. That's always good too, to be able to add to your food. This week I'm going to have the Chamber of Commerce into the office for a little gathering to show them what plant-based nutrition is all about. I'm going to serve maybe some hummus, probably make some sunflower seed balls to have for dipping in hors d'oeuvres, and some other fruit trays or whatever. And talk a little bit on the benefits of plant-based nutrition, because I think it's, again, such a well-hidden secret. You know, going back to the book about the heroes a little bit, you know, the people of Crete provided a huge resistance in World War II against the Germans. And the people of Crete were, you know, it's a small island, and they were a tough people. And they were lean and mean and could defend themselves, but also of extreme integrity. And I just think it's really important for us to appreciate that we need to become a leaner society, and a society that can depend on ourselves to take care of ourselves. And that really means taking back our health and not depending on other people to take care of us. You know, that being said, as a physician, it sounds kind of goofy. But I think my role as a physician is, yeah, to help people fix people. But a lot of times it's to help people fix themselves and to educate. And I think, you know, instead of a pill pusher and a procedure pusher, we need to become more educators and to educate people how to take their health back through nutrition and through exercise and through movement. And you know, look around this week and look at people and the size of people and their mobility, and think if they had to defend themselves in a crisis, you know, running from a volcano or running from a flood, or, you know, to go without food or to have to walk 15 or 20 miles to get somewhere, could people around you take care of themselves? And what would happen? And are you of the... are you fit enough to take care of yourself? And if not, I think no matter what your age is, that should be a goal. And nutrition is the way to, you know, to the end, the way to get to that. By eating, you know, healthy and being a whole food plant-based diet, then you're more likely to be lean and have the energy to move and to heal yourself and to sustain yourself. You know, I think we were meant to be moving bodies. And, you know, it needs to be part of your routine, just like the food and cooking and meals are part of your routine. And it's not one of those things like, you know, I'm going to get in shape and then, you know, I won't have to do it anymore. I also think we're fooled by some of the gym environment that, you know, we have to go to a place to do an organized event or an organized class. You know, I think that to be outside, and there's actually an article or a study that was done and published that looked at what you would get out of being outside doing an activity versus being inside doing an activity, or even being in a city versus being out in the, you know, in the country doing it. And your cognitive benefits that you get with interacting with nature is so much greater than it is if you were just to do some sort of manual activity on a track or a treadmill. So if you have the opportunity, any way you can, get outside to do some of your exercise, if not all of your exercise, because there's so many more benefits that you see. You know, just the fresh air alone is great. But and take the headphones off, you know, and enjoy nature and the sounds of the birds. I think it's so important. Of course, you can listen to this podcast if you want. Well, it is October the 14th, and soon Halloween is coming, and that is the first so-called holiday where food is involved into this now marathon of Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. And it's a time where a lot of people start to fall off the wagon. So the next couple of podcasts, I'm going to kind of focus on how do you transverse these activities over the next couple of months. If you go to the grocery store, as soon as you walk in, you see aisles of candy out. And you may have a lot of trick-or-treaters come into your door and, you know, what do you offer them? And, you know, in the past, you know, growing up, I remember, you know, I lived in a very small neighborhood many, many years ago when I went trick-or-treating, and you always remember the person that gave the apples, you know, and of course there was the razor blades in the apples. That was a good reason not to have to eat it. And you always remember the person that gave the big candy bars and the big candy. So, you know, what do you do with the grandkids? What do you do when you're buying your own treats? You know, it's a little difficult. I think some of the Lara bars and things like that, you know, are a good option. There are a lot of recipes on making apples, the candy apples, for your own family. You know, certainly there's no reason to make them for kids just stopping by because nobody's going to eat them because they're afraid you're going to poison them. But, you know, some of the Clif bars and Luna bars might be a better option. You know, obviously some of the pretzel packs wouldn't be all that horrible for kids. And again, you know, a little bit of candy, a little bit of chocolate, you know, as long as it's dark chocolate is probably not going to hurt any kid. And I think, you know, in some respects, you know, withholding some of that stuff makes people want it more. But, you know, I think the way that it's sold in these giant, giant bags of stuff, I'd avoid having that around the house because that just leads to trouble. And I don't buy any of the stuff that has milk in it, you know, milk products, whey protein, or excessive oils. I just can't bring myself to get that to kids. So, see what you can do, but that's, I'll probably have more along those kind of healthy things around than the giant bags of candy. Certainly won't have them in my house. There are a lot of recipes online for candies to make your kids that, you know, are relatively healthy, some raw chocolates and things like that. So you can make desserts to have for your own kids and then, you know, limit what they have, what they get, and explain to them what's in this stuff if they go trick-or-treating. The next holiday, you know, Thanksgiving. Most people think it's not Thanksgiving unless there's a turkey on, there's not a turkey on the table. And that's just not so. So, you know, everything else is fair game as far as Thanksgiving goes. Just eliminate the turkey and you can make the dressing without the turkey. And I'll start to put some stuff on the website on some recipes for Thanksgiving. And there's tons of them, you know, out there for pumpkin pie and pumpkin cookies. This is one of my favorite times of the year to do things with pumpkin. I made Joel Furman's, he has a banana ball recipe in his book, and I substituted pumpkin instead of the bananas, and that worked out really well. But there's lots of recipes for pumpkin breads that are healthy. Another thing that I like to do is the oatmeal. When you do refrigerator oatmeal, add pumpkin to that and pumpkin spices and raisins and pecans. That changes your oatmeal up for the holiday season. My daughter made a great pumpkin waffles where she used whole wheat flour and pumpkin. And the rest of the stuff you use for, you know, just baking soda, baking powder, to make waffles that were excellent and pump, you know, with the pumpkin flavor. So there's plenty of things to do around the holidays that don't involve meat or dairy that you can do. You know, if anything else, just cover your table with more of the varieties of different kinds of plant-based foods. The pomegranate seeds are really pretty with butternut squash and quinoa and kale. That's a really pretty dish, and it's very, very tasty. And so when your friends and family see something like that that looks really good and it's colorful and it tastes really good, then they don't really care about the brown stuff anymore. You know, again, I think it's very important that you declare yourself plant-based, plant strong, and don't make exceptions for the holidays. This is not a time to get off the wagon, because once you're off, it becomes difficult to get back on, especially through the rest of the holiday season. If you use that as an excuse that it's just the holidays, then that can continue, you know, well into Easter if you don't watch out. So, you know, be respectful, but, you know, I'm plant-based and I'll eat these other things, but there's certain things I can't eat because of my health. There's no real good reason to have high cholesterol 6 months out of the year and then try to get yourself back in gear in the summertime. So declare yourself plant-based, be respectful, but, you know, just say no and have your backup foods available for your own self. And it's you know, and as far as the children go, you know, and grandchildren and family, it's still good for them. There's plenty of other foods to eat. So I wouldn't, you know, there's no need to feel bad or feel guilty or to change your menu just because you have company that aren't plant-based. I'm going to end with a quote from Daniel Kirsch. He had both of his eyes removed as a child from retinoblastoma, and he is one of the founders of World Access for the Blind. He uses an echo clicking, so it's really a sonar type way for humans to navigate and use their brains to see as opposed to their eyes. And his quote that I think is very good is that ignorance and fear are matters of the mind. So, you know, perhaps people that aren't plant-based or that fear that you're plant-based, it's just kind of in their head, or it's just kind of in your head. And, you know, being fearful is not going to help you in any regard, but accepting the challenge of, making people like your food and presenting food that they have no choice but to like is, you know, a great thing to do. And, you know, if they don't, then they probably are fearful and don't take it personal. I'm seeing success every day with people that become plant-based, that we're taking them off their medications. They're becoming more active. They're starting to do push-ups. They're starting to walk. And people are coming here to my office or calling in to want to change their life and want to get off their medications and making positive changes. So it truly does work. I'm encouraged to keep doing it. I am most passionate about this and the podcast as well as the class. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. My website is drdulaney.com. It's DOCTOR, Delaney, DULANEY.com. I'll post different recipes and things on that as we go along for Thanksgiving. Keep in mind, January 21st will be the date of our plant-based, all-day-long plant-based nutrition conference here in Port Charlotte, Florida. We'll have Dr. Clapper and Tim Marie Hagerberger and myself and some other speakers and some cooking demonstrations, so it'll be a good time. You know, declare yourself plant-based. Don't be afraid. Don't be fearful. And move. Move your body and see how many different ways it'll bend. And stay young. Have a good week. Talk to you next week.